Can you think of any other time in modern day politics when there's been division like we're seeing today? What's been the results? Well, you know, very little legislation passed, programs that millions rely on for their health and well-being, not just endangered, even cut, servitude to one replacing serving the many, and, your basic overall hostility that's expanding the division even more. Doesn't sound like there's much hope, does it? Well, I believe there is. If you learn from the ideas and insights my guest offers through his experience, he also shares in his recent book, Finding the Third Way, lessons in the politics of, say it with me, civility from my journey through history, while being a partner and co-founder of the law firm Davis Goldberg and Galper, partner in the public relations firm Trident DMG, served as special counsel to President Bill Clinton, and to this day is a devoted Willie Mays fan, Lenny Davis. How are you today, sir?
Say hey, Willie. And now I'm a Knicks, always been a Knicks fan, but thank you for that intro. I do want to just jump into one very provocative and interesting comment you made. Has there ever been a time in U.S. history? And I don't think there has been, except for one time period where 300,000 Americans killed each other called the Civil War, and that was when we were using firearms. But short of using firearms, the Trump era, and Democrats carry some responsibility to, is the worst in American history. So I do agree with you.
But when you look at just the sheer numbers of things in the House and the Senate, the numbers being so evenly divided, what does that tell of the American citizenship that we don't know which one's the better offer right now? Or is this an opportunity, as many believe, in the midterms coming up in November for the Democrats to really see the door being wide open for them to make a difference and move forward?
Well, first of all, the difference nowadays is personal demonization of somebody you disagree with. Back in the days where it was Ronald Reagan, very partisan conservative Republicans versus very liberal Democrats, and a lot of really vitriolic words being exchanged, at the end of a long day, it was absolutely a fact that President Reagan would get into the presidential limousine, very quietly go out South Lawn exit, go up to the hill, go into a side entrance where nobody would be surrounding him, although, of course, people were aware that the president was visiting. And where would he go? He'd go into Tip O'Neill's office, the Speaker of the House, who during the day was beating up on him, verbally but not physically. And what would they do? They would tip a scotch or a whiskey. They would laugh. They would disagree. And they would figure it out. That's a big deal difference. And I know in the Clinton White House, with all the polarization between Newt Gingrich and Bill Clinton and Democrats and Republicans during the daytime, Bill Clinton and Newt Gingrich, and I will throw in Joe Scarborough because now he's a TV personality, but back then he was a backbencher, hardcore conservative, they would sit down, and what did they do? They balanced the budget. And went, balance the budget, that's an expression that you say, what? Come on, nobody balances any budgets anymore. And when Bill Clinton left office on his last day after two terms, he left a $3 billion surplus. And he didn't do that himself. He did it with Gingrich and Scarborough and the Republicans compromising. So that's a big deal difference than today and back then.
Well, another big difference is, and I said this in the intro for a reason, serving one versus serving the many. And, you know, it's great when you see Marjorie Taylor Greene, John Cornyn, Tom Tillis, the list is growing, speaking out against Donald Trump. But the problem is, they're all on their way out. Unless, you know, for those who aren't getting primaried out or saying, you know, I've had enough, I'm out of here, those are the ones we need to hear that from.
Well, that's the reason they're free, is they don't worry about losing their office because they're out anyway. It'd be great to see a couple of members of the Republican caucus say, you know what, this job doesn't pay me enough to really undermine our Constitution, because the Congress is supposed to be the check and balance to the executive, and we've got the spending power. That's what the framers wrote. We want there to be a stalemate between executive power and the Congress. We don't want a dictatorship of the Congress. They were more worried, if you read the history of the writing of the Constitution, believe it or not, James Madison wrote they were more worried about a parliamentary democracy because of their memories of somebody named Cromwell who took over the British Parliament and almost imposed a dictatorship with the Parliament. So they were worried about too much power in the Congress. But the whole point is checks and balances, don't trust anyone. And we're going to need Republicans who are not fearful about losing their jobs, not just the ones on their way out. But I have to say, Democrats are no different. Democrats have not stood up to Democratic presidents. Everyone feels a need to be loyal to the president of their party. So I'm trying to be even-handed here that I'm not just blaming it on a party or a group of Republicans. It's part of our system, this loyalty issue overcoming patriotism and commitment to the Constitution. I think both parties now are waking up to the need for there to be checks and balances because Donald Trump's made it very clear he thinks executive power is supreme and that there isn't a check and balance. There is a whole group of conservative Republicans who have invested in projects about executive power. They actually call it the unitary executive, which is contradicted by James Madison and the Constitution. There should be no unitary anything. The whole system was set up not to trust any part of the three branches of government. So we've got a challenge, certainly, and it's both parties. I keep saying Democrats have a lot of responsibility for this mess, as well as Republicans.
Dr. Lanny Davis, his book, Finding the Third Way, and his website, LannyJDavis.com. You're listening to Issues and Ideas. So let's take that approach looking at both parties. Because for the Democrats, everyone's saying a door wide open. I just said it earlier, too. But it's not an automatic. And for Republicans, what is it they need to do to avoid falling back to the days of almost irrelevancy, back to the days, I'm showing my political age here, Bob Livingston and Trent Lott leadership times?
Two great people, by the way.
Oh, yeah, no slam on them, but they were very complacent.
Mr. Livingston and Mr. Gingrich, over the years, I've actually become friends with, which is, shows it's possible. So I think there's about two or three answers. I'd speak to the Democrats first, because I'm a Democrat. I think we have failed miserably in giving the American people an alternative to Donald Trump. And the proof for me is I have a lot of liberal Democratic friends, some of them conservative Democratic friends, who voted for Trump. And the reason they always give me is they dislike Trump's character. They think he lies. They think he ignores the rule of law, all of that stuff. Then why did you vote for him? Because you're worse, meaning you Democrats. You don't have anything to tell me positive. You only know how to trash Trump. So for me, my big goal in the next few months, I'm writing some columns on the subject, is the way James Carville said, it's the economy stupid. Well, I'm saying to Democrats, it's policies stupid. We have to change policies that have offended the middle class and working class of the country that we used to have, that were Franklin Roosevelt, Harry Truman, John Kennedy Democrats. We've lost a lot of them. So I'm focusing on what are we saying? What do we stand for? That's offensive, and how can we have a positive message to the American people?
When you take into account, too, as of most recent polling, there's a huge block of voters that are just drifting right now, specifically the Black and Hispanic voters. Trump did gain a lot of support from those two demographics, but for a variety of reasons, they're turning away from the Republicans, but have yet, in great part, turned to the Democrats. Is that going to be the deciding factor, what happens with the midterms?
Well, you're absolutely right. They're turning away from, but they're not turning to, the Democratic Party, because when you turn away from something, you have to have something that you're listening to that you like. You don't turn away and then hear silence. You think to yourself, I have nowhere to go if all you're doing is silence. So for me, I'll just give you a prelude to what I'm about to start writing for Real Clear Politics, which is a series of columns about what are we for. And it comes down to, without imitating him exactly, it comes down to thinking like Bill Clinton. When he left office on his last day after two terms, can you imagine if Donald Trump could say something like this, which of course he can. On Bill Clinton's last day after two terms, he had a 66% Gallup job approval rating. That is unprecedented in American history. How did he get, with all of the issues and controversies, and when I was at the White House, they called them scandals, which I was responsible for handling with the White House press corps. How did Bill Clinton achieve 2/3 of the American people gave him a positive job approval rating? Right now, Donald Trump is down to 30% job approval, the lowest in American history. How did Clinton do it? It's the policies, stupid. Sure, he had a great personality. He was likable, came from Arkansas, good old boy. But that's personality stuff. What were his policies? And the policies were, I started out a little bit with you, and I won't go on further than one sentence. When is the last time we spent what we took in and we didn't use a credit card and keep spending using a credit card? Because who pays for that credit card? We don't. Our kids pay for the credit card.
Yeah.
We pile up debts. We go around the world, if you don't mind the metaphor, first-class airfare, first-class hotels, great vacation. We parents, you know, have a great time. When we come home, what do? We take all the receipts from the credit card, and we dump them on the beds of our children, and we say, you pay. That's what Democrats stand for. Democrats vote for great programs that they say, oh, we need Medicare, we need Medicaid, we need help for child care, we need all these things. Yes, we do. But you know what Democrats also say? We're not going to pay for them. We're going to use a credit card. And our kids will pay, or our grandkids will pay. So everybody sees through the hypocrisy of the Democratic Party not being willing to pay for all these great social programs. And that's the difference between Bill Clinton and today's Democrats. We have to explain to the American people we stand for balanced budgets, fiscal responsibility, but we also believe in government. We're Franklin Roosevelt, John Kennedy Democrats. That's what we stand for. Everyone asks, what do the Democrats stand for? We stand for government that helps people. But the big but is we have to pay for it. And if that means increasing taxes, we have to increase taxes. If that means cutting spending, we have to cut spending, or both. That's what Bill Clinton did, and that's why I wrote my book called Finding the Third Way. That was his third way.
And that's always the foundation of open-minded, ability and willingness to listen and to look at solutions like Lanny just described, as opposed to personal uplifting and glorification, which too many today seem to want to exist. You know, it's a matter of how much can I do for the person who gave me this job, as opposed to how much time can I get on, pick the media outlet of your choice. Again, the book is Finding the Third Way. He talks about through personal experience. This isn't theory or studies or research. It's through personal experience and observations of how there lies before us answers and opportunities for a stronger, better population, as opposed to politicians. You can also learn more about Lanny's life and world at LannyJDavis.com. Lanny, it's always an education speaking with you. Look forward to your upcoming columns. I know they will additionally be educational. Thanks for being here today.
Can I add a personal comment before you hang up? Which is, I'm a Jersey City boy. I'm a great fan.